Folks, we're going to call this meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order. We do not have quite enough people here for a quorum yet, but Representative Davids is here, so we thought we'd start. We are going to start off with a presentation from Driver and Vehicle Services. And Representative Davids, are you?
I'm fine.
I thought you were going to testify about something.
I'd be happy to.
Okay. But before we do that, if the folks from Driver and Vehicle Services, if you want to come up and we'll get going. When we get a quorum, we'll approve some minutes from last time, and I don't know where they went. We just had our pages here. I wanted to introduce them, but they're apparently missing. Oh, great. Now we're going to have to call public safety. Thought they'd be funnier. Tough crowd today. All right, well, we'll introduce them later then. Ron, do you represent Crucia? Do you want to introduce anybody while we're introducing?
I certainly do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with me today is somewhere over here, is my intern from Long Prairie, Minnesota, Austin Bogart. And just wanted to introduce him and welcome to the legislative process.
Thank you, Representative Crucia. Austin, welcome. So one of our goals today is to make Representative Crucia look extra good. So let's all help.
That's always our goal, isn't it, Mr. Chair?
Well, that's always one of our goals. Today it's one of the main goals. But we'll get going. If you guys want to introduce yourselves for the record and start with your presentation, we would appreciate it. And welcome to the committee, by the way.
Thank you very much, Chair and members of the committee. We appreciate the opportunity today to come to talk to you about an update on our process with insurance verification. My name is Don Olson. I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. I have Tom Henderson, who's the Vehicle Services Program Director, with me, and he will provide an update. At the end of our presentation, we'll be available for questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Thomas Henderson. I'm the Vehicle Services Program Director for Driver and Vehicle Services.
Enjoy. Well, welcome. If you guys want to start with your presentation, go ahead.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, during the 2014 session, the Minnesota Motor Vehicle Insurance Coverage Verification Task Force was established and charged with making recommendations to improve insurance coverage. The task force submitted a report to the legislature on February 1st, 2015, with five recommendations, which only one recommendation was actually enacted in law, that DVS strengthen the proof of insurance requirements for registering, re-registering, and transferring the ownership of motor vehicles beginning January 1st, 2016. The new law changed insurance requirements from the owner attesting to having insurance to now requiring the owners to provide insurance information. Motor vehicle owners can register, re-register their motor vehicles at the deputy register office, by mail, and over the internet. Motor vehicle owners can transfer ownership of their on their title form, normally conducted at the deputy register office. To prepare for the change, DVS began a project to change our systems, our processes, and our forms that support many of the ways that our customers interact with us. To help educate the public on the insurance requirements, DPS issued press releases that were picked up by local media. We provided the deputy registers with signage, and further, we added language to our renewal notices informing the customers of the insurance requirements.
So, with that, that's just a very brief overview. We're open for questions or any other comments about the topic.
Well, seeing no other ones, I have questions. I was one of the people on the task force and was the house author of the legislation, and our intent very broadly was to, I guess, in a rather light fashion, let people know that they need to have proof of insurance when they get a vehicle. And I think the long-term intent is when the new computer system in the next few years is done, maybe we don't want to do this, maybe we do, but at the least have the ability for that system to let law enforcement know whether or not people have insurance. And that's for future legislatures to decide whether that's a good idea or not. Mm-hmm. But a couple of questions I have. I've heard from a couple of our members that there, and I apologize, I don't remember the cities, but anecdotally I've heard that there are some places where there are deputy registrars that are telling people to just go write down what your insurance company is. And I don't know if you've heard anything like that, but I think in the spirit at least of the law, we would want something from an actual insurance company. So I don't know if you've heard that, but if you'd care to comment, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, members, no, not specifically.
Okay.
We have asked the deputy registrars to The customer doesn't necessarily have to show their insurance card, but they do have to provide the insurance information, the insurance company name, the policy number, and the expiration date.
Okay.
And the same process is also applied at the deputy registered office when they renew by the internet or by mail.
Would we be better off tightening that up a little bit to say it has to be something, an actual letter or card from an insurance company? Would that help?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, you know, we're fairly new into the process, so we're trying to make modifications as we go right along here to see. I agree that, you know, we're not necessarily verifying the information that's provided, and I think that's one of the objectives here, is to eventually get to a verification process. So as we see that roll out in Menlars, that could be something that we would want to add okay. to the process, is they have to show proof to be able to verify that information.
Unless, I mean, I think that was our intent, that mm-hmm. they had to prove that they had auto insurance. But unless you tell us differently, I don't think we want to mess with that this year. As you say, it's being rolled out, and let's see how it works and what we're doing. Unless you say, here's what we should do. In a long term, is we just wanted to raise the percentage of people that, you know, have auto insurance. Other questions, members? Representative Luna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last year when we enacted the verification component, we also allowed for electronic verification. And I know there's a lot of agents simply having their insureds take a picture with their phone of their cab card and taking that to the deputy registrar. So having something official from the insurance company, it is relatively simple to solve.
Chairman and members of the committee, I agree. You know, the information's available in a lot of forms. For those that are maybe going to a deputy office, more than likely they have it in their vehicle. It may not be on their person, but it's close by. It's easy to get to, or it's in their wallet. But, you know, our biggest challenge is around what comes in the mail, and we don't have that interaction with customers, and they may not be, they're just not used to the new requirement on this. So that's becoming a little more challenging for us to be able to administer, because they're not seeing that. And then we have to communicate a little bit more with people. But our goal here was to make it consistent. Wherever they went to renew, the process was the same. If they went into the deputy office, they still had to show proof. If they renew online, they have to give us that information before they can complete the transaction. And if it comes in through the mail, we have to send the documentation back and say it's not complete.
I have another question. Are there any places in the state who's doing this, deputy registrars or anyone else, where they're wanting to keep a copy of the information? I've heard a couple of members say that, where they're wanting to get a copy, a photocopy of somebody's insurance card or whatever it would be.
Mr. Chairman, members, we're not requiring a copy, but we right. do know that some deputies have asked for a copy.
Okay.
A copy would be, if a copy would be asked for if it's unlegible. If it somehow provides it easier to read,
okay.
But it's not a requirement.
No, and it, we didn't mean it to be, but I was just curious. Thank you. Other questions, members? Anything else you want us to know about this? Anything we should be thinking about for the interim or next legislative session? Any way to make this work better? Anything we really screwed up on? Because that would be the Senate that did that. That's a joke. I'm kidding.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, you know, like I said, we're new into the process, and we're learning all the time on how to make this better, how to make the public more aware of what the requirements need to be. And I think if your intention is to get this to a verifiable process where we can verify that information, make it a little bit more credible as people come in and provide that information, that's certainly something that we want to be mindful of as we're building our Menlar system, to make sure that functionality is a piece of that as well.
Okay. So. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And please feel free to communicate with us. Let us know if there's something that you see that needs to be changed and needs to be fixed. Representative Lilly's got a question.
Thank you, Chair. Happy I
Representative Lilly, welcome back.
Welcome to you as well, sir. I so enjoyed being on that committee with you. I thought maybe you'd want to.
Were you on this committee last year?
No, this driver's license thing, wasn't
this
I?
This is a tough crowd today.
But it's early. I thought maybe you wanted to redo all that whole life experience that you had on that committee.
No, thank you, Representative Lilly. We spent the interim with Senator Kent and Senator Gazelka working on that, and No, we, I think we covered that. One last question, another one from a member brought this to our attention. Just in terms of title transfer, where you have somebody that's just transferring a title, if they're doing a, was it antique cars or motorcycles, where they're, you know, they're really not insuring it to take it out on the road, they're just transferring ownership. How has that been handled in the past? How are we doing it now, and how should we be doing it?
Mr. Chairman, members, we're requiring insurance for every motor vehicle transfer. The vehicles you described, we're still requiring insurance.
Thank you. Did they have to have that? I mean, that requirement didn't change from the previous law. It was just that they had to attest rather than show proof.
They had to Mr. Chairman, members, they had to attest that they had insurance. But this goes back to vehicles that are registered or operating on the roads of Minnesota,
right,
and they need to be registered. If they're registered, they need to have insurance. If the vehicle is going to operate in not an off-road in the back 40 of the farm, they don't need to have registration nor insurance.
Got it. Thank you very much. Anybody, anything else? If not, seeing no other questions, thank you very much. Appreciate
the
update. I think we're going to start with House File 1066, which is Representative Kreisha. And we will officially call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum now, so now we are officially in order. Representative Sundin, did you get a chance to look at the minutes from the last meeting we had?
Yes, Mr. Chair, quite thoroughly, and I move the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Sundin moves the minutes. Anybody see anything that needs to be corrected, changed, added to, or looked at? Seeing none, those in favor of approval of the adoption of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Sundin and members. The minutes are approved. We have a quorum. We are officially in order. With that, Representative Kreisha, if you would like to move House File 1066 so it's properly before us, please do that and then proceed with your testimony.
And, Mr. Chair, this is going to the General Register. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct.
So, Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to officially move House File 1066 through the Commerce Committee to the General Register.
And this is something that was returned to the committee during the interim under Rule 4.20. So we're not going to be taking testimony on this today. Representative Kreisha, I don't see Mr. Elwood here, but I think you're still going to be working with him and Mr. Schreiner and the telecom folks, and this is still a work in progress. We just want to get it back to the General Register so we can move it along. Anybody have any questions? Representative Johnson, you're good with all this? See nothing else. With that, we'll have Representative Kreisha renew his motion that House File 1066 be re-referred to the General Register.
And at this time, Mr. Chair, I'd like to tell a story from my childhood. No, I'm just kidding. I would like to make a motion.
Have we tabled the bill yet this year? With that, sir, Representative Kreisha will renew his motion that House File 1066 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Next up will be House File or Senate File. Sorry, 1523, Representative Smith. And while Representative Smith is coming up, this is another bill that came back to us because it was not acted upon last session. So under Rule 4.20, it came back to the possession of the committee. And Representative Smith also has an amendment to this. I'm sorry, Representative Lunan has an amendment to this. Representative Smith, would you like to move this bill so it's properly in front of us?
So moved.
So, Representative Smith, do you want to tell us, or Representative Lunan, do you want to present your amendment to this bill? You can go right there. It's fine.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment that I'm adding has to do with small businesses, 50 employers or less, that want to self-insure on their health coverage. The committee heard this last year, and I believe it passed without any no votes. And what it does is it creates an opportunity for small businesses that basically have a healthy group of employees to try to do some cost savings on their premium. I think this is an important move because when MinSure was first enacted or affordable health care was enacted, it took away underwriting negatives for people and gave them access to health care. What this does is puts the opportunity matched up with the consequences, and that the people that are doing the right thing can take advantage of those efforts that they've done and enjoy lower premiums.
Thank you, Representative Lunan. Representative Smith, do you want to make a comment on that before we go to member questions? And I know Mr. Brickwitty and others, I think, want to comment on that amendment as well.
No comment.
No comment from Representative Smith. Seeing no questions, Mr. Brickwitty, welcome back. Oh, Representative Sundin.
There was a, Mr. Chairman, there was a opposition. I guess it was on the House floor, though, and that would have come from me. So.
Well, if it gets back to the House floor, I'm relatively confident there would still be opposition. So.
We can guarantee that.
Got it. Mr. Brickwitty, welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Peter Brickwitty, Assistant Commissioner from the Minnesota Department of Commerce, and a pleasure to be back with you members yet again this year. First of all, I want to thank Representative Smith for authoring the underlying bill. The components of the bill, as you recall, members from last year, reflect the work of compromise between the department, the Council of Health Plans, and the American Cancer Society. There are three components. One, parity in cost between orally administered anti-cancer medication and intravenous and radiation therapies, a clarification in the law to which was passed by this body several years ago. It also contains restoration of some important filing rules for health plan companies, which were inadvertently deleted in 2013. And it also has a consumer protection improvement, which allows consumers 9 months to file a appeal of an adverse determination from their insurance company, which again reflects the work of the compromise between us and the Council of Health Plans. The amendment from Representative Lunan is quite controversial, and I, Representative Lunan, we had a conversation about it just before committee, and I fully believe your heart is in the right place on this. But members, make no mistake. This amendment will cause rates to go up on small businesses in Minnesota. This proposal changes what is called the stop-loss attachment point for when a company self-insures its health risk. Makes it easier to do that, but it also means that the businesses take on more risk. And so Representative Lunan is correct in that this will make it more attractive for healthy companies or companies with healthy employees to move, creates adverse selection in the market. It also incentivizes them to come back when one of their previously healthy employees gets cancer, or there's a high-risk pregnancy involved, or another high-cost health event. That, again, will cause rate impacts on the rest of the market. The Commerce Department opposed this bill when it was in committee last year, so I know that this will be of no surprise. I will point out, too, that Minnesota's current law of $20,000 of a stop-loss attachment point is consistent with the NAIC Model Act, and the NAIC's actuarial studies not only support the existing model, but actually recommend to states that they go the opposite direction and move higher than $20,000. The only other state that was looking at this proposal last year was the state of Maryland, and they did exactly the opposite of what this amendment proposes to do. Maryland's stop-loss attachment point was $6,500. In this past year, they took it to $22,500 and also ordered the Maryland Department of Insurance to study the effects on the insurance marketplace. So again, Representative Lunan, I appreciate what you're trying to do here. I think there perhaps are other ways that we may be able to attack this issue of controlling costs for small businesses, but the Department of Commerce would oppose the amendment.
Representative Lunan.
I have a question for the testifier. Would you agree that the higher deductible that is put on these companies makes it much more difficult for them to self-insure?
Mr. Brickwitty.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lunan, the attachment point makes sure that companies are able to take on the financial risk of self-insuring.
Right over here.
If you lower the attachment point from $20,000 to $6,500 or another number, that means that the company doesn't have as much skin in the game. And so you create a potential situation where if a company misjudges the risk or they have an unexpected health event for one of their previously healthy employees, this can cause a lot of financial risk for them. But also, that also creates rate impacts for the rest of the market, because when they come out of the fully insured market, sicker groups are left behind. And when they come back with a sick employee or a riskier employer, then there's also a rate impact that way as well.
Representative Lunan.
Okay, that was a really long yes. So would you agree that when the ACA came out and they no longer allowed underwriting of pre-existing conditions, at the outcry of the insurance carriers who wanted to measure risk, and it was decided that, nope, we're going to pool everyone together, and that had the effect on rates that it had, that there certainly was no opposition to doing that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lunan, I think there was a lot of opposition to the ACA as it passed, as I recall. But
from your side.
I think that one of the issue that we have now is we've reached a point of stabilization with small group rates. And I think, again, this will have an impact on rates for companies that are not able to do this. Some companies may find it attractive to self-insure, but there's nothing preventing them from that now other than the stop-loss attachment point makes sure that they have the financial capability to take on the risk of self-insuring their business.
Representative Lunan.
And the your comment that the 6,500 isn't arbitrary. There's several other states that's the number they use. And the intent here is to make it more viable. One of the comments that the Commerce Department said in their testimony is to prevent financial ruin or making a big mistake. This minimizes that, or certainly reduces it. That's what this move does. And it facilitates employers that have healthy employment groups that are creating healthy environments in their business to get a much more direct reward for it. Again, the adverse selection, that happened when the ACA was enacted, where all of a sudden there were people that came in and were not underwritten. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. That would be another discussion. But this falls in the same thing. What this does is it allows the privilege that came with that responsibility. That's what this is an attempt to do.
Representative Lunan perhaps agree to disagree on whether or not this will help businesses. I don't disagree that it potentially makes it more attractive, but again, it will have an adverse selection impact on the market, and to the extent that a company misjudges the risk, they could potentially be on the financial hook themselves for a very difficult situation, and then a rate impact when they come back to the fully insured market the following year.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, to Representative Smith, I guess. If this, are you good with this language to your bill, if it's more or less kind of a poison pill to the bill? Or how strongly do you feel about moving your bill forward?
Representative Smith.
The Chair, Representative. I'm not sure if I would classify this bill with the language you used, respectfully. I'm not quite sure how to answer that.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Smith, I'm a little uncomfortable with your answer. I'm a co-author on the bill, but I think it was a department bill, you know, that I signed on to. It was my understanding it was really not that controversial. It was kind of agreed by industry and commerce, and now to hear, I mean, it's a pretty substantial change. It just seems to me that it should be just kind of an effort on your own with a bill going through the process, and then argue the merits of it and maybe not including it to basically a bill that isn't doing that sort of thing. So I think it's unfortunate.
Well, Representative Lilly, maybe to this point, maybe Representative Smith or Mr. Brickwood, you can tell us, this was returned to the committee. It was on the general register last year. It didn't pass, obviously, since it was still there. Maybe for the benefit of the committee and the audience here, if somebody, either one of you, could just sort of recap how it got to the general register, what happened, why it didn't pass last year.
Mr. Chair, members, there was a compromise with the Commerce Department with the department, all the interested parties. There wasn't any dissent. I was moved to the House floor, and we ran out of time, so it was returned. That's where we're at today.
And Mr. Chairman, I would add, Representative Smith and I visited about this bill last week prior to the hearing, and my commitment to him has been as it has been in talking with the council and the other stakeholders who were involved last year, that we'd like to pass a clean bill. And our hope is to try to get it back to the floor as quickly as possible so that we could attempt to do that.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just would encourage us to go a different path and just, certainly it passed in the Senate. I hate to refer to the Senate with anything, but I don't know if any of us are trying to go over. I don't know where Sanders is going home. I think he's not going to the Senate, but some of our team are trying to get over there. But anyways, passed 55 zip, but that kind of shows the nature of it perhaps being not controversial, and this would change the nature of it. And I just think it's unfortunate. And I think if Representative Lunan went on his own course with his own effort, and maybe it would pass this body and be signed into law that way. But I just would speak against going this direction, sir.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I heard the testifier say that there might be other ways to achieve what Representative Lilly is after. Could either of you expand on that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think I would concur with Representative Lilly's analysis. I think what we have before us in the underlying bill from Representative Smith reflects the work of compromise. It's good public policy that's going to be do some good when it is passed and enacted. I think that the provisions of the amendment were a standalone bill last year. The Commerce Department was opposed to it. I think we're going to hear from some of the health plans as well that they have concerns. So I think Representative Lilly is spot on that this amendment, if it were to be adopted, certainly would change the complexion of the overall bill.
Well, with that, since you mentioned health plans, why don't we have a couple of the health plans just happen to be conveniently be standing there? Why don't we have a couple of them come down and give us their take? Oh, Representative Dean, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since we're on this sort of line of questions, and I'm not sure if this would be to you, Representative Smith or Representative Lee, is there someone in the Senate that's also offering this amendment to their existing bill when it comes back to them?
Why don't we, Representative Lunan, do you want to, is there a Senate counterpart to this?
Mr. Chairman, not that I'm aware of.
No, but the amendment. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To this point, it was our ABLE staff brought it to my attention that your bill actually passed the House, right? So maybe if you get over there and smack those darn senators around and get them to support your effort, maybe that's a better course.
Now, Representative Lilly, we're not going to start condoning violence against the Senate yet.
Just a possibility.
Representative Dean, were you good? Did you have a follow-up to that?
Well, I guess my follow-up would be if this passed the House, the amendment as a standalone, and we're attaching it to your bill, and there's not a Senate counterpart, we could put the whole bill in jeopardy by doing this. So I would just caution us what we attach to this bill. Thank you.
We're just so darn efficient. With that, why don't we hear from Mr. Freeman and Ms. Nelson and tell us their support for the amendment. Did I misconstrue that? I'm sorry.
For the record, my name is Robert Freeman with Health Partners, and we are supportive of Representative Smith's bill. It was reached after some long conversations with various different stakeholders, but we are here in opposition to the amendment. We opposed the bill when it was introduced as a standalone bill. Two, we've had several conversations with Representative Lunan and others last year, and we opposed the bill. So for the reasons that Mr. Brickwetty outlined, we do have serious concerns about the consequences of this for the individual market. Essentially, you're allowing healthier groups to move out of the individual market, which leaves sicker groups. We're concerned that could lead to an insurance death spiral for what remains of the individual market. It's our understanding as well that because we're now in a different environment since the passage of the ACA with guaranteed issue, we have a concern as well about adverse selection. Because if you're now you're creating two groups where people can jump from one group to the other depending on how sick they are or what their risk is, then that really drives up the risk for those groups. And we have a hard time believing that we can predict what the impact of this change will be without doing some further analysis. And So I don't know if Mr. Brickwitty or there's another entity that would be interested in kind of further analyzing that, but that would be our recommendation if we were to look for a kind of a third way, would be to try and find an opportunity to study what the impact of this would be actuarially so we can have a better understanding of what we're doing to the market by making this change.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Ms. Nelson?
Hi, my name is Lynn Nelson from Blue Cross Blue Shield in Minnesota, and I'm speaking only to the amendment, the A9 amendment from Representative Lunan at this point in time, and I do have concerns with that amendment. I'm not going to repeat what my predecessor said, Mr. Brickwitty or Mr. Freeman. I do agree with those points. A couple additional things I do want to say is Blue Cross Blue Shield actually saw a slight decrease in their small group market last year, and so we're seeing some stabilization in that market since the ACA that we've wanted to see, and we want to see in the other market. So there is a stabilization going on, and if you push on one side, it's going to come out somewhere else, and someone else is going to have to pay those costs. The other thing I want to point out on the amendment is that there's an effective date of August 1st, 2016, and right now we are in the process of preparing our plan filings, and that just would not be feasible to have that in place for the next plan year for 2017. So I do agree with looking at it and studying it. We don't want to make any harsh movements where we're going to have unintended consequences of some of these bills coming forward, and particularly of this amendment. So thank you.
Members, any questions for either of the folks from health plans? Otherwise, we've got a whole line of people that want to come down and speak.
Oh.
I'm assuming that you two won't leave in case we do have questions, but we'll have Mr. Hickey and others come down here. Thank you very much. Mr. Hickey, welcome back.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business.
There's a slide in next to you, too.
And I just wanted to share our strong support for this amendment. This bill had strong bipartisan support last year, and it passed the House, and that was very encouraging. Small employers need options, and that's what Representative Lonan is trying to do here today. It's been a rough ride with Obamacare for the vast majority of small businesses. You might recall better the small minority that have benefited, who had a terrible pre-existing condition in the individual market, happened to have a very sick small group. Those people benefited, but we threw underwriting out the window on claims experience, and by impacting community rating on claims experience factor, a lot of small businesses got clobbered. 40% seemed to be the trend increase that we saw in a survey we did for 2014. So people got huge increases when this came into being, and small employers need options. Obamacare has basically usurped every meaningful state insurance law that existed. Everybody's under one plan. Doesn't matter where you're buying it. It's playing out in the same way virtually in all the states. I did want to take objection to one thing one of the witnesses said, Mr. Brickwitty. If a small employer went off on one of these and had a bad experience, just due to what I said, we don't have claims experience underwriting now, you're not going to come back and get clobbered. That was the old market situation prior to Obamacare. You can't underwrite for experience rating. So if a small employer tried this, didn't work, and came back, they have this overriding protection of Obamacare, the ACA. So that amount of downside has been taken away. A lot of states have this $6,500 attachment plan point. We're way high at 20, and this is not very affordable to a lot of small employers. We've really taken an option away. So I want to urge you to support it just like you did last year. We had a strong vote last year. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. You guys want
to? Hey, you.
Go ahead whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm the Director of Healthcare and Transportation Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I want to apologize for being late. So I wasn't here to hear Mr. Brickwitty's testimony, but I think I can assume what he had to say, and I just wanted to kind of offer a couple of points. Certainly in support of the Lunan Amendment. First off, I want to echo everything that was just said about, you know, small employers in particular looking for options to cover their employees. Providing health insurance for employees has been a hallmark of the employee-employer relationship in Minnesota. But as was just mentioned, that has gotten increasingly more difficult in recent years. This legislation is an effort to simply give, you know, some employers another option, so they can be competitive in the marketplace, so they can attract the kind of workforce they need to keep their businesses profitable. In the past, they were able to look at other things like defined contribution and other mechanisms that the ACA has largely shut down. You know, there are very few levers at the state level anymore that we can pull to make things easier for small employers. This is one of them. And frankly, it's a lever that we can pull to bring Minnesota more in line with most other states. Most other states that they have stop-loss deductibles that are set in statute or regulation are at the $6,500 level or non-existent. Most states, or many states, have no requirement whatsoever. They simply let the market determine what level of stop-loss should be required. And you heard some folks from the health plans talk about the need for more study or independent looks at this. This is something that has been studied pretty significantly, specifically since the passage of the ACA. And I'll pass, and I'm sorry I didn't get this to you before this happened, we spent a lot of time in the interim since the last session looking at that very question. What has been the experience in other states where there are lower stop-loss deductibles, where it's easier for small employers to self-insure? And there, as I said, there have been a number of studies done, one of which was commissioned by Congress as part of the ACA, to look at this question of whether or not post-ACA we would see a flood of firms moving to self-insurance as one of the testifiers said, leave a spiral in the small death spiral in the small group market. And point blank, what their report from the RAND Foundation, as sponsored by Congress, said was, quote, overall, these results suggest that the adverse selection due to the absence of self-insurer is not a large concern, end quote. So, you know, I want to underscore the point that was just made, that this is merely one option for some small employers to pursue. This is by no means a silver bullet. You know, we will still have a lot of work to do on trying to make it easier for small employers to self-insure. But this is one area in which we can pull a state lever to bring Minnesota closer in line with other states and make it easier for small employers to retain those people that make their businesses profitable. So I will share this this one page that we put together that cites a number of studies looking at this question and cites a lot of data from other states and nationally about what this market looks like and what the characteristics are. And I would urge you to support this, because this is something that, you know, has been studied significantly, has worked in other states, and is an area where Minnesota can catch up to its peers.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Members, any questions? Representative Lunan, any questions for any of the people, any of the testifiers? Anybody else in the audience that wants to speak for or against either the amendment or the bill as amended? Well, Representative Smith and Representative Lunan, we've heard a lot of testimony on this both ways. I think it was Mr. Freeman that said we should do some further analyzing. And since I happen to know that this committee meets again tomorrow, why don't we lay this bill on the table for tonight, and we can take this up again tomorrow? And I think that might give some of the parties that are working on this a chance to get together and rehash all of this again. Any final comments, Representative Smith or Representative Lunan? Seeing none with that, I will lay Senate File 1523 on the table, and we'll plan to take that up again at some point tomorrow. Thank you, members. And with that, we're moving to the most controversial bill of the day.
Chair Happy, we are about ready to take House File 1586 before the committee. If you'd like to move it before the committee, and I also know we have a DE amendment, and maybe what we want to do is do the DE amendment first, and I will turn it over to you to brief the committee on what it is your intentions are here this afternoon. Chair Happy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, this is House File 1586. This was what is popularly known as the patent trolling bill. And in this committee, we always strive for compromise or peace in the valley or whatever you want to call it. I introduced this bill last year on behalf of the bankers and the credit unions, essentially. And they introduced it to kind of get a placeholder, and they said they were concerned about it. We wanted to work on it. There were some people that were not necessarily opposed, but that had concerns about this. So I would like to commend everybody that's been involved in working on this during the whole interim. And we now have the product, the DE amendment that we're going to talk about in a minute, is the product of that off-season negotiation, so to speak. So I think it's been a good example of seeking peace in the valley. And I think we have what we have now is legislation that everybody maybe doesn't love but likes, and I'm not aware of any opposition at this point. So with that, I'll turn it over to my esteemed testifier to explain what the compromise was.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. If you would state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Tess Rice. I'm general counsel for the Minnesota Bankers Association. We represent about 95% of the banks in Minnesota, from the largest to the very smallest. Our members became concerned about patent assertion entities or patent trolls when some businesses in Minnesota were being victimized. So they asked us to look into it. Patent trolls are groups or entities that acquire patents with the sole intent of just sending letters to people using that technology, threatening to take them to court, and then asking them for money in exchange for not taking them to court. Sometimes they don't own the patent at all, or they have an expired patent, but they send large volumes of demand letters to small businesses that lack the resources to fight them in court. In Minnesota, there were hundreds of small businesses that were targeted by a patent troll out from the East Coast, and it was because these businesses were using a scanner that someone claimed to have a patent for a part in that scanner. So the idea was that this is an end user of a product, and you had to pay this patent assertion entity a user fee for every employee that would be using that scanner, so $1,000 or $2,000 for using that technology. They have cost businesses and consumers throughout the United States millions of dollars, but Congress hasn't been able to agree on a solution for this because this is a federal issue. There are 27 states that have passed legislation because they don't believe Congress is probably going to get it done. There are bills in Congress. There's about five of them, I think, right now, but there is no indication that anything is going to pass. So we introduced the bill last year, and then we worked on the interim over it, and what we came up with was language that really targets a discrete issue. It's not patent litigation. That's a federal issue, and this doesn't involve that at all. It only addresses those that send demand letters to end users. So this isn't patent fighting between two big companies that are both inventors of products. This is just protecting those who receive bad faith patent assertions for using a product as an end user. So what this does is prohibits that bad faith claim of patent infringement, and that would be one where they falsely claim that they filed a lawsuit, they don't have the right to enforce the patent, that patent's already been held to be unenforceable in a court, their patent has expired, or that claim doesn't include enough information, and this is often what happens. You can't tell who says they're owning the patent, or what the patent is, or what you're using that even has the patent in it. This authorizes the Attorney General's Office to investigate bad faith claims and then bring an action in court to enjoin a violator of this statute. And the AG can seek penalties up to $50,000 in reimbursement and restitution to businesses that have had to defend themselves. But it does not create a private cause of action. So it's very narrowly tailored to that end user and the demand letter, but it also provides some safe harbors to important industries in Minnesota. So if you have any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Rice. Before we go any further with questions, I do see some hands coming up. We probably should get the bill officially before the committee in the form that the author would like. So Representative Hoppe, if I am not mistaken, this is ultimately going to go to civil law. So if you want to move the DE amendment, and then we'll adopt the bill, and then we'll maybe move to questions or other comments that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move the DE amendment.
Representative Hoppe moves the DE2 amendment to House File 1586. Questions on the DE amendment? To get the bill in the form that the author wants, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The motion carries. And now, Representative Hoppe, if you want to bring the bill officially before the committee by adopting as amended and to be referred to civil law, and we'll take questions.
I think it's already in front of us. We just adopted the amendment. I moved the bill earlier.
Thank you. With that, did you have any comments before we start taking questions?
Actually, Mr. Chair, I have two quick comments. One is that, and I forgot this, everybody should remember every time anybody in this committee says peace in the valley, Representative Davids gets a nickel. So we should be careful about how much we use that.
It's my patent.
Thank you. Sometimes I just set them up for you. And with that, Mr. Chair, with your indulgence and the committee's indulgence, I was going to do this when we first started, but they were both out of the room. Could you two pages step up or stand up for just a minute, and we'll say hi and introduce you guys? Nick Nigro and Will Ishii are the pages for the committee this year, and they might look familiar to everybody. So nice to have you back. Thank you. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will stand. We will stand for questions. Don't leave me.
Thank you, Representative Hoppe. I have Representative Davids followed by Representative Swazinski. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to get this straight here. So, Chairman Hoppe, the banks support this bill as amended, and the credit unions support this bill as amended?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, that is correct.
And Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Chairman, and you're the chief author of the bill, I think we should vote for it.
Peace in the valley, Mr. Chair.
He will be collecting nickels at the end of the meeting. With that, Representative Swazinski, followed by Representative Dean. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of a quick question. It sounds like there's 28 or 27 other states that have legislation kind of like this art in books. My guess is that, you know, some of the operators that would fall into this trap of patent trolls would not necessarily always act within state boundaries. How, and would potentially be the same actors in multiple states, how are some of those states, what kind of success have they had in fighting this or not?
Ms. Rice.
Representative, Mr. Chair, we have seen that the states that started with patent legislation a few years ago, it looks like it's moving away from those states to places where it's easier. So we didn't want Minnesota to be an easy target, though I will say that the Attorney General is already doing a really good job.
Representative Swazinski, follow up.
That's good.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a few questions. So I'm sort of, my mind can't quite understand why the bankers are up here testifying this, so could you could please explain that, and then I'll add my other questions to it.
Ms. Rice.
Mr. Chair, Representative, not all the bankers care, you're right, but it's more of a business issue, and members approached us because it didn't look like any other group was going to be working on patent legislation, and they asked us to start working on it. And I think that we had hoped someone else would take the wheel, but that didn't happen. So you're right. I am not a patent expert. None of us are, but we worked with groups that know a lot about patents.
Okay. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow up. So who are the people that have been working on this bill over the past few months to get it in a shape that we all think has created a nice field of flowers in between mountain ranges? We don't have to pay the fee.
Very poetic, Representative Dean.
Nicely done.
With that, I my hunch is that you are Genevieve
Plumidor.
Okay, yep. Thank you. Perhaps she's better suited to answer that question, Representative Dean, so we will defer to her. Ask you to introduce yourself for the record, and then if you want to take Representative Dean's question.
Will do.
Even if you don't want to take Representative Dean's question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Genevieve Plumidor. I'm here representing Medical Alley, and we represent all of the companies in the Twin Cities and in the greater state that represent health technology. So it's Medtronic, 3M, St. Jude Medical, Boston Scientific, as well as the research institutions as the U of M and Mayo Clinic. And we're here to lend our support to the Delete All Amendment, and we would first like to thank Chair Hoppe for his leadership in sending us all to the table during the interim to come together with some good comfort language. Patents are really the lifeblood of the companies that I represent, and the original bill inadvertently characterized some of their activities as trolling when they indeed have patents that they have spent millions of dollars into researching and developing, and you know, have the right to fight any infringement upon those patents. So we'd like to thank the bankers for their leadership also in this, and this is definitely a bill that we can all live with. It exempts our companies that, again, are doing good work here in the state of Minnesota around innovation.
Representative Dean.
Okay, and this will be my last question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I'm a small business and I receive one of these letters from someone who's trying to trick me into paying them money, and I do just throw the letter away and don't do anything with it, there's really no legal recourse that this company that's out, and I understand we've got two different situations where people that are truly trying to protect their patents, and then we have other individuals who just really don't understand whether or not they have infringed upon some patent or not. So my question is these companies that are doing this would really have no recourse beyond threatening to take me to court, I'm assuming, and if I just say, well, you know, tough, I'm not going to do that, because if they did take me to court, there'd be no case, I'm assuming, correct?
Ms. Pomodoro or Ms. Rice?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, there are different variations of these patent assertion entities. So some, you know, might have a colorable claim. You know, maybe that patent is expired, but at the time they're accusing a company of using that technology. They did have a lawful patent. This gives an avenue to, you know, you can go right to the Attorney General and she can go and take care of this, you know, by contacting that company. Because I think, you know, we don't know at that point if it's legitimate or not. And you wouldn't know if you have office equipment. I mean, you really have no idea. And yeah, you could throw it away and maybe nothing would happen. Or you might get repeated phone calls and letters threatening you to pay money. So potentially, I guess it could end up in federal court if one of these companies chose to do that. I mean, there have been plenty of cases like that. You're right, if they don't have a real claim, that's unlikely. But I don't think people know whether it's a real claim or not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lunan. And just for clarification with Representative Dean, the insurance wouldn't pay to defend in these situations because breach of contract is considered an intentional act. And so even insurance companies themselves will make what they call a defense settlement, where they'll pay a claim that isn't legit. That's what they're trying to avoid.
Any other member questions at this time on House File 1586 as amended? Anyone from the public needing to or wishing to testify? Seeing no one rushing down, Representative Chair Hoppe renews his motion that House File 1586 as amended be referred to civil law. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Seeing no other business before the committee
chair.
Representative Lilly, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, I realize there's a bit of a void here, and I know it's a big week. I'm not a hockey guy, but I know we have a history of this committee doing the basketball thing, so I think we have a job for Mr. Reynolds to step up to the plate and take over the task of basketball duty. I don't know if Chair Hoppe has an opinion on that. And then the other comment was more to Representative Lunan, I think he could learn from the chair and on his amendment. And I'll put my nickel in there for the peace in the valley, so we can maybe on Mr. Smith's bill we can get peace in the valley. Is that 10 cents?
It works.
No. Mr. Chair, are you going to take over the basketball?
We'll get back to you tomorrow or Friday.
Friday.
Can we do the fancy gambling bill first?
No, we can't. And with that, members, we are adjourned.